WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Carrie Fisher grew up the daughter of famous parents and an infamous divorce. The family was in the headlines when her father, Eddie Fisher, left her mother, Debbie Reynolds, for Elizabeth Taylor. The notoriety didn't stop Carrie Fisher from getting into show business herself. She starred as Princess Leia in 3 Star Wars films, but her career stumbled. She was getting parts in second-rate movies, and she developed a drug habit that landed her in a rehabilitation center. But things changed after rehab. Her acting career was revitalized by When Harry Met Sally. She played Meg Ryan's best friend. And Fisher's semi-autobiographical 1987 novel, Postcards from the Edge, was a bestseller. Now she has a new novel, Surrender the Pink, and Postcards from the Edge has been made into a new film that opens this week. The screenplay is by Carrie Fisher. It's the story of a young actress trying to restart her film career after getting out of rehab. She gets plenty of unwanted advice from her domineering mother, an aging musical comedy star. Shirley MacLaine is the mother, Meryl Streep is the daughter. I asked Fisher why she didn't star in the film.
It never occurred to me. First of all, if I could have the choice between me and Meryl Streep as who would be the actress in anything, I would go for Meryl Streep. And I don't think I would have been able to carry that film. So it's not like Stallone writing Rocky, you know. I think it's a film that would be perceived as being far more autobiographical than it actually is, and me mixing myself up into that will then turn it into an apparent documentary.
Right. You've been in a lot of films, and now you've had the chance to write dialogue for others. You've written some very funny lines for people. Have there been lines you've had to read during your career that you didn't think quite worked, that you really wanted to rewrite?
General Kenobi, years ago you served my father in the Clone Wars. I have begged you to help me. I have placed information vital to the survival of the rebellion into the memory systems of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it, okay? We used to say to him, you can type this stuff, but you can't say it. Yeah, I have tons of stuff that, you know, seems like it's a well-constructed sentence, but it is not how people talk. It's how people write. So that's why I think it's sometimes easier for me to write for actors, because I know what's frustrating about, sentences that come out just perfect. Well, who talks like that? And who of us don't overlap each other? Except on the radio, hopefully.
Now, you not only have a new movie, but you have a new book, and the book is called Surrender the Pink. And in the back of the book, you have acknowledgments. One of them reads, I would like to thank my mother for being such a good sport about what people think apropos of what I write. Would you elaborate on that?
Well, meaning that she not only had to sit through my book where she said to me after reading it, she said, well, you know, dear, people are going to think that this is you. Meaning people are going to think this is her daughter taking a lot of drugs and actually in excess of what I had I had friends who knew me well that after that book said, I didn't know you shot heroin. So I think it's a trivializing tribute to the plausibility of a lot of the way that I write. And also in the movie now, the character of the mother is, I don't know what is sort of like, is drinks a couple of times and the daughter thinks that she's an alcoholic. But I wrote that intending it to be that if I had moved in with the Pope after I got out of the rehab, I would have thought he was an alcoholic because of the wine every day. I mean, that's how I thought. And I don't really believe the mother is an alcoholic in this. And that's not based on anything current or true in my life, but I know it will be, you know, thought, because the movie is so well done, that my mother and I shriek at each other on stairways. After she saw it, she said she thought the fight scene was so good that she thought we could find a nice stairway and try it out. But we actually, you know, fought when I was a teenager, which I think is a more appropriate time. And we were so upset by the fighting that we haven't repeated it.
What kinds of things did you fight about?
Well, she had like a breakdown when I was about 15. A lot of different, you know, what you fight about is, no, I don't want to go to that school you want me to. I want to do this. No, you can't. Yes, I will. But she had a nervous breakdown at that time. And so some of the fighting was, I thought she should leave my stepfather, who had lost all his money and hers and humiliated her in various other ways. And I used to just berate her. I must have been a horrible child. I wasn't a comfort. I was an accuser. And I used to just tell her that she should leave Harry But her breakdown never manifested in actually breaking down, or there was no nervousness attached to it. She would drink, and she did a show. She did a Broadway show for a year, and she lost a lot of weight, and that's all that ever happened. But in my mind as a teenager, I urgently required that she be all right, because I didn't have any other parent.
Let me read the acknowledgement about your father in the book. You thank your father for that Jewish thing.
Well, that's actually something my mother always... when she thinks that I'm just this little extra bit upset, which she attributes to, that's that Jewish thing, dear.
So do you feel, your mother was what, Protestant?
Nazarene, actually. She's from Texas, where she was kicked out of the church for becoming an actress and asked back in for becoming a movie star.
Carrie Fisher is my guest. Your new novel, Surrender the Pink, is about a woman named Dinah who's going through a rough period because her ex-husband has a new girlfriend, and that's making Dinah very unhappy. In fact, she even hides in the closet one day and eavesdrops on the conversation of her ex and his current lover. And what she finds out is that this woman is really like living and breathing to take care of him, you know, spending all her time cooking up these fabulous recipes and so on. I'm wondering if you've seen that happen a lot in show business, that men end up seeking out women who are just going to be their helpmates as opposed to,
you could see where if you're having a gigantic job, which a lot of these powerful men that I know do have, then what they really, it would be nice to have a counterpart, meaning somebody who was literally your mental peer. And so you had all these dazzling conversations and you know, debates and so forth. But really, I think a lot of them, you know, it's the difficulty of knowing whether you want a companion or a counterpart. Do you want to be soothed or stimulated? And if you're so stimulated by your career, then basically it would be probably best if a woman soothed you. I mean, the ideal would be to have an intellectual geisha, someone who provided both. But I think that's a contradiction in terms.
Carrie Fisher, you were probably photographed since you were born because you were the daughter of famous parents. How did that affect how you felt about being on camera?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I really don't like it. I don't like my face. I don't like to look at it. I just can't get past it. That's why I say I would rather not watch myself in movies. I enjoy the experience, but I won't really see the film until they're on cable deep on into my life so I can pretend it's someone else at another time.
What are some of your memories of these press sessions as a kid when you were, you know, daughter of famous Hollywood
stars? They don't ask you anything. You just had to stay out of the living room and not, you know, make too much noise because Mommy was having a meeting.
Were you ever, though, the adorable child that had to be on camera?
Just in those sort of parades and stuff and at Christmas and what have you. And a lot of, my mother liked to take a lot of pictures of everything. We had leather-bound books of every birthday and Christmas, and I used to just really sulk dramatically as a Hollywood child might be wont to do. This is the biggest power struggle my mother and I had. My biggest rebellion was finally getting out of some Christmas shots once. I just felt it was just too intense to continuously be documenting our lives in this way. But she liked to do it, and she'd gotten used to it. I just didn't like it.
You also didn't have a career that it was going to help.
I had her career. I was part of her career. That's part of the thing. They take home shots, particularly in those days. You know, that was like Debbie and her family. And then when my parents divorced, they took all those, like, spying shots. Debbie's tragedy, Debbie sobbing over children. And I always just looked really like someone who will someday be on prescription medication. No, I look sort of panicked and jostled. I look like, you know, caught in the headlights.
You look back at those pictures now? Do you have scrapbooks with this stuff in it?
Every night. Yeah, every night. Drinking and drinking and looking through these scrapbooks.
No, but really, do you have them anywhere? So you have these
somewhere. I only come upon them every time. I remember one evening I found stuff at the beach. And some fan had sent my mother a scrapbook of the whole divorce thing, which I have no memory of. I was two. And there was all this stuff in it about Elizabeth and what she said at the time. Well, you can't really break up a happy marriage. And I remember at whatever age I was then, which was like 23, I was pissed. I thought, you know what? The classier thing to do, babe, is just don't say anything. Maybe that's true, but you don't come out and say stuff like that. So it's like when people ask me what I felt about her at the time, nothing. But at 23, I had a little bit of a thing where I thought, oh, really?
Have you seen her since then?
We don't really correspond. Yes, I have seen her at a party. But someone came up to me at a party once and said, Elizabeth is very upset that you haven't come and said hello. And I thought, Elizabeth is upset that I haven't come. You know, like, what is our relationship? So I was summoned. So I went up to her and I sang, we have so much in common. And whatever else ensued, it was this inane exchange.
Do you feel that you're getting different kinds of roles now in your acting career?
I'm playing the friend now. I'm going through my friendly phase.
Well, you were certainly that in When Harry Met Sally.
And I've just done a film called Drop Dead Fred with Phoebe Cates, and I play her friend. And I was a very good friend to her.
Did nearly ODing and then recovering from your drug habit change the kind of acting you wanted to do or the way people perceived you who were casting you?
I don't get any really, like, loaded roles, you mean? I don't... No, I had a bad reputation of somebody who might get stoned on a movie. And so I just, that kind of went away, you know. But it takes a long time. I mean, they still ask at insurance companies who have to, you know, cover the film, right? And if somebody gets sick or whatever, they have to pay. And they will not cover you for drugs and alcohol. And if you have a history of doing drugs or having abused drugs and alcohol or being in rehab, they can ask you for screens. And I don't mean Japanese silk screens. And they actually, as recently as a year ago, you know, asked, well, is she all right? Is she, you know, still going to AA or something? So it tends to cling to you.
Mm-hmm. Did you start your career performing with your mother in her club act?
Yes.
So you were doing song and dance stuff?
Dance, no. I dance like my father, but I break just like a little girl. No, I sang in her act. Well, actually, there was a little humiliating dancing, and I'm still in therapy to correct that, and taking antibiotics. But I did that from 13 to, say, 17, and then I went to drama college. The last fight that I had with my mother was over that. She insisted that I go, and at that point, I wanted to be a nightclub singer.
Now, what kind of songs were you singing in the act?
If I loved you, you know, I have a big Broadway voice, or, you know, a medium Broadway voice.
You know, your appearance hits included Tammy for your mother, Debbie Reynolds, and Oh Mein Papa, Dungaree Doll for your father, Eddie Fisher. These were the songs in a way that rock and roll was rebelling against. You know, did you relate to their songs?
Sure, I married Paul Simon. I rebelled against that. Yeah, I like those songs. There's beautiful songs. My father, particularly, he had Count Your Blessings. When I'm tired and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep. It's so sweet. Irving Berlin. And they're not painting the skies as blue this year. Wish You Were Here. I mean, really nice. My mother had one that was Am I That Easy to Forget? Really tuneful, like, they say you found somebody new, but I don't want no one but you. You know, stuff that, like, Ronstadt could do covers of these older types of songs, which she has, and they're great. I mean, I just think that there's a line drawn between the generations, but I don't think... There was a point when I was doing her act, and I was singing those kinds of songs, and I thought, when I was high on marijuana one night... I don't listen to music like this, therefore I must stop doing this stuff in the show.
And is that when you stopped?
Yeah, I sang Bridge Over Troubled Water. If I don't have a weird life, I don't know who does.
There's a moment in the movie Postcards from the Edge when the mother and daughter run into two gay men who are big fans of the mother's. And one of the men confesses, I loved your act. I wanted to be you. He does her in his drag act. And she says, oh, all the queens love me. Did you run into that with your mother?
Oh, God, yeah.
And what did you make of that?
Well, I had a large gay. I followed the gays, too, then. I mean, my mother's, all the guys in her act were gay, and I used to have terrible crushes on them. They were all so good-looking and clean-cut and perfect, and they had all those little dancer bodies. And I was just devastated when I was about 16 that I thought from about 13 to 16 that all men were gay. And then I found out when I went to drama college in England that only half of them were.
Your first movie role was in Shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
And you were, what, 17?
Yes.
And you play the daughter of a woman who's having an affair with Warren Beatty, one of the many affairs that he's having. And then you proposition him quite aggressively in the movie. So you were pretty young, 17. And in your new book, you have a line that goes, I'm not really fluent in sex. I speak it, but it's more a second language. Now, I don't know if you feel that's speaking for you or not. But
oh, yes.
Well, what was it like for you at 17 to, you know,
becoming... Say that line. I was a virgin. And Warren, of course, so lovely, informed the entire crew. So that there is, when you see the film, they cut instantly after the line because the entire crew would burst out laughing. Because there I am saying, you want to, and, you know, I didn't know what I was referring to, in fact. So it was, you know, I had no sense memory to draw on.
What was your audition like for Star Wars?
I like to say that I was sitting in Schwab's with that ridiculous hairstyle and George Lucas walked in. There's no good story to it. You know, I knew Fred Roos, who was the casting director. I was going to drama college in England by then, and I came back, and they did a video of me reading, maybe alone and then with Harrison. And that's, you know, and they did two of those, and I was selected out of it was a very long process, but they sort of hired us as a trio.
You actually went to school for professional children, right?
What does that mean, though? And we're as opposed to amateurish
right.
children.
Well, it's for children who are working.
You get paid for being children. I was only there temporarily. I dropped out of that school. So that, or slid. I went course by course in the 11th grade. So I am a high school dropout. And I like to say that writing is perfect karma for a high school dropout in that I have homework now for the rest of my life.
Do you ever regret having dropped out of school?
Yes, absolutely. Because I really enjoyed, I went to drama college for that year and a half, and I really enjoyed that. I enjoy community a lot. And I would like to have, you know, gone and taken literature and philosophy and skilled myself. And now that I'm doing writing, I really feel the lack of a lot of formal education, although I don't know. I don't know what it would have affected. I mean, I seem to have a peculiar unschooled style that maybe that I would have just turned out more ordinary. I don't know.
In Postcards from the Edge, the mother who's a famous performer wants her daughter to sing. And I was wondering if this ever happened with you. I know you sang in your mother's act.
My mother wants me to sing. My grandmother wants it more.
Wants you to sing more?
Yeah, but you know what my mother said after seeing the movie? She said, well, dear, now you don't have to sing.
Oh, because you can write so well.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, your parents want you to do sort of what the... And it's really a testimony to her enjoying what she does so much. But I was always panicked to go into the same field because she inhabited it so successfully, you know, and I couldn't do it. And I have stage fright. She does not. She has incredible poise and, you know, mastery over the moment, and I have to really overcome a lot of fear, and I end up being good. I mean, I can do in a way what my mother does. I can be chatty and spirited and, you know, whatever it is that's required on talk shows or on a stage. But it costs me something that I can't spend that often. And it doesn't cost my mother that. She really loves it.
Do you sing
yeah.
anymore?
No. I mean, I never... Yeah, okay, I did when I was a teenager, but I did a lot of things as a teenager that I'm ashamed of.
What's the difference in Hollywood now between when your mother was making movies and now when you're making movies?
Oy.
I mean, what are anything you miss, you know, that you wish you had?
There were women's roles. They made careers for you. They wrote scripts for both men and women. You could, you know, have a career that you were under contract to a studio and they gave you 3 movies a year to do. The bad news about that was you had to do them good or bad, but the good news was you were always employed. They promoted you. Now you have to hire your own publicist. You have to go out and hustle your own movies and get an agent and a manager and a... And there's, you know, 29% of the roles in movies now are for women. And it's on a downward trend, which means that there will be no women in films by the year 2000. And I'll be writing car chase pictures. They'll get postcards from women that used to be in films.
So I take it you're not very happy with most of the roles that you see.
Oh, when you see them, there's so few that, you know, the best actresses are going to... Films that used to be more independent type films, they can get great actresses for now because all the other films are like whatever, there's Total Recall and Die Hard, and where there are, you know, there is a woman, but it's like 3 scenes in the plane. So, yeah, I think that's bad. And women's roles after 40 are under 5%, which means it follows the same lines as procreation. As our eggs die, so do our careers.
So which direction do you plan to be heading in more, writing or acting?
Well, I think I better write because in about 7 or 8 years, my eggs are going to be on the griddle. And as a writer, they can't limit me that way.
One last thing. You watched your parents live out their lives in public, and especially when your father, Eddie Fisher, left your mother, Debbie Reynolds. It was a really big story for a really long time. Has that made you especially uncomfortable about having a public relationship?
Well, obviously not, because I had one.
Well, you had it with a public person, with Paul Simon, but I don't know how much it was played out in public.
Well, I mean, there's some of that. You know, it's like you're repelled and drawn to. I mean, look, I really pretty much repeated my mother's life in that way. I mean... Strange. I went into movies the same age she went into movies. I had the same first agent. I became a star at the same age. And I married a popular, small, Jewish singer. And it was also a disaster. I suppose fortunately or unfortunately, we didn't have children. But that's kind of... So if I certainly haven't shied away from my mother's life. If anything, I've, you know, really studied the blueprint.
Did Paul Simon run away with an Elizabeth Taylor type?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I'm sure he's sorry to report. Unless he's with Elizabeth McGovern or something now. Hey, that's an idea.
Well, Carrie Fisher, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
You know, actually, the good thing is Elizabeth is available, so maybe, I don't know. Let me make a couple of calls.
All right.
All right, nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. Thanks so much.
Okay.
And Carrie Fisher, she wrote the screenplay for Postcards from the Edge, which is adapted from her own novel, and it opens on September 14th. And she also has a new novel called Surrender the Pink. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.